This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hi, everybody. Cheryl from Unleashed, and I am very happy today to have with us Garrett Wing from American Standard Dog Training. How are you, Garrett?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for having me on.
And the other company is what?
Our online dog training courses are available at DIYK9.com, as in do-it-yourself dog training.
So I want to ask you, you have a very cool name. Do you also train parrots?
No. Just barely get by training dogs, and I'm definitely not great at training my own kids. So don't ask me for too much parental advice. We're still learning there.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about you. You have a very interesting background. I read everything that I could find on you. So tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I've been working with and training police dogs for over 20 years. I got my start training police dogs because my father was a police canine handler since 1981, and I was born in 83. So I literally grew up in a household with one police dog or another throughout my entire childhood and into my adult life. Then I got onto the same police department as my father and my stepmother, and my mother and my stepfather all worked for the same agency. And my father and my stepmother were a part of our canine unit. I got on the canine unit. And so it's pretty much unheard of to have three members of the same family on the same canine unit at the same time. And so that's where I really cut my teeth in dog training. And we've since ventured out beyond police canine training and now do pet training. And the reason for that is we say for every police dog that needs training, there's probably 10,000 or more civilian pet dogs that need training. So a lot of need out there for pet training. And I'd like to think that we take what we've learned in decades of training police dogs and how that can transfer owner to your everyday pet owner.
Now, do you have a facility where the dogs are? Or do you go to the home or do you go to at the park?
Yeah, so we specialize in boarding and training. We do 6-week programs, which consists of basic and advanced on and off leash obedience. We specialize in training from our home. We think of high quality, low volume. We only train 2 to 3 dogs at a time. So we're kind of a specialty or boutique dog trainer. A lot of our clients are high net worth individuals, celebrities, professional athletes, et cetera. And we also have a network of certified trainers who have trained under me using our system. And we're continuing to grow our network of certified trainers.
So now, do they come to your facility and work along with you so they get to see, you know, how it's done? Because a lot of the problems I know with my Tilly, it's me. I mean, you have to be consistent. Dogs like routine.
Absolutely. So when you're referring to coming to my facility, do you mean the owners or my certified trainer?
The owners.
Oh, 100%. I think that's where we exceed above and beyond where other dog trainers kind of leave off. Typically, even when we're training dogs, we're not the first trainer. We're usually the second, third, or even fourth trainer. I think there's a lot of fantastic trainers out there who are great at training dogs, but they fall short in the aspect of training the human to maintain the training that's been put in. In fact, we have a dog in our program right now that did a great board and train program with the trainer, except never taught the owners how to maintain it. And in no short time at all, the dog was right back to being just as wild and rambunctious as ever. And so she's come to our program where we spend a ridiculous amount of time, well above the industry average, training the owners how to maintain it. And what we refer to as we're making those owners what we call owner trainers. And even though the dogs that leave our program are amazing, we tell them, if you do what we tell you to do, not only will your dog maintain the training that they have, they will improve and age like a fine wine.
Wow. What is the program? I mean, how long is it? 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Yeah. So typically we do a 6-week program. However, we don't really like to put a time limit on it. So if a dog needs extra training, whether it has aggression issues or anxiety issues, or it's just struggling in any way, we can stretch it out up to 8 weeks or longer, because not only do we get the training in, but we really like to proof them off of distractions, meaning I think bare minimum, it takes about 4 weeks to get a dog to a pretty advanced level, meaning on and off leash obedience training. But then that's just the bare minimum. We like to stack on at least a couple extra weeks of now proofing that dog off of distractions out in the wild, so to speak, taking them to restaurants, taking them to stores, taking them to the mall, taking them around the exterior of dog parks to really proof that obedience off of distractions. Because we always say, anybody in the world can get their dog to sit in a kitchen for a treat. I want to know if your dog will maintain that position. and do it the first time, every time, under what we call the highest level of distraction, which is what we call a D10 distraction, meaning from a level 1 to a level 10. And so that's what we call real obedience. And that's what all of our dogs leave our program with.
Is that how you are with the canines also? You know, I mean, I know that they are specialty dogs. They only take, I think, what are the Shepherds and the Malamutes are really good for that, the Belgian Malamutes.
Yeah, so it's German Shepherds, Belgian Malinois, and Dutch Shepherds are the typical trifecta that you see out there. But I think it doesn't matter. The only reason we use them is because they're typically a higher drive dog, and they are the right size that we need. They're not too big. They're not like a Mastiff that's 140 or 160 pounds. It's difficult to get in and out of your police car. And they're also not so small that if they were to be used to apprehend a criminal, the criminal doesn't just toss them over a fence. So they're right in that sweet spot in terms of drive and size. But I think what you were hitting on there is that's where my police background comes in, is because we know what dogs are capable of. We train them to a very high standard. We cannot have a dog fail us on the street. And we take that same standard or approach to dog training, and we transfer that to the civilian realm, meaning we don't need the dogs to say, run down and do a 100-yard bite on someone, right? Like a straight bite. We don't need that. But if I ask you to recall, our police dogs have to recall the first time, every time. Lives are at risk. Well, in the pet world, your dog's life could be at risk. If it's running after a squirrel and it's not on leash and it's about to cross the street, you need that dog to turn around on a dime.
Yeah, you bet. When I first got Tilly, at one of the pet expos, somebody gave me a leash. It wasn't because of the leash, it was because of the hook. And sure enough, she was looking at a squirrel. She loves squirrels, but now she respects all wildlife except for frogs. But she was looking at a squirrel and got, for some reason, the way she moved, it got undone. And she was bolting. And like I called for her, and she did stop and come back. But it would have been ugly if she continued. Because when dogs run, they don't look where they're running to. They just run.
Yeah, absolutely. They just get target locked on whatever it is they're chasing. And I think I'd like to talk about something else as a perfect case in point. Really, the only difference between a police dog and a pet dog, because a lot of times people think it's like completely different. No, they're all dogs. Police dogs don't know that they're police dogs, and pet dogs don't know that they're not police dogs. There's some very strong, powerful, ferocious pet dogs out there. And not that even police dogs are that ferocious. Really, what we clarify police dogs typically as is simply they have more horsepower. So, you know, you could be driving, let's say, a Toyota Camry, just your kind of everyday car that a lot of folks drive. Police dogs are kind of more like a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. They can have 600, 1,000, 1,200 horsepower. And that's really the only difference. But there's a lot of pet dogs out there that have the same exact drive to chase a squirrel, to chase a ball. They have tremendous drive regardless of the breed, regardless of the age. And regardless of the size of the dog, I've seen some miniature schnauzers that would give a police dog a run for their money. So I like to, yes, they're somewhat distinct, but really in the end, they're still animals. They're still dogs. They still have the same natural drives. And it's our job as owners and trainers to channel those drives, cap those drives, and basically keep them out of trouble.
Yeah. See, I have a Ferrari.
There you go.
That chuck it ball. There's really no, because I go to the park, so we're going to talk about that next. I go to the local park. We've become a wonderful family. All the dogs get along. It really is. I'm blessed. You know, I'm in South Florida, so it's really a mile and a half. And, you know, I live in a smaller condo. I didn't plan on getting the size dog I have. She's strong. I'm a lot older than her. So, but she is, you know, very sociable, very friendly. You know, I did start out bringing her to Home Depot because lots of people, lots of noise, lots of machinery. Of course, the first time I went there, the lights went out. It was during a thunderstorm. But I'm not going to bring it to a department store. I'm not going to bring it to a restaurant. She is food orientated. And so we're fine where we go. But I'd have to bring her to the park just to get out. You know, she's only two, so she's still a puppy. She needs to run. And really, there's no place where I live that I would feel comfortable off leash running her. Where I run her, they have 4 acres, actually 5 acres of dog park. Big dog, medium-sized dog and small dog, and they all mix up and everybody gets along. But that's how I know that when a dog is running, when they run after each other or they chase each other, the whole idea is they want to be chased. Who's got the ball? But Tilly is focused really just on, I really wanted to do agility with her, but she doesn't seem to have any interest. It's just the ball. But when they run, they just run. And if you're standing in front of them, you're going down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's a perfect example of how, even though your dog's not a police dog, I'm sure she goes after that tennis ball just like a Belgian
Mountain goes after
a bad guy. So it's the same context. It's just swapping out what the target item is. For my case, my personal dog, Thanos, he likes to do bite work, but he has tremendous prey drive. So if he sees a deer in our backyard, he's off to the races. But I put in the training early on that I don't care if you're chasing a deer or not. I let him chase him sometimes and have a good time. But if he's going the wrong direction or he's starting to get a little too far, it's one and done. I call him back. He has to turn around and come back to me. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. And that's what allows him, however, because of that high level of obedience training, it gives him a tremendous amount of freedom that most dogs don't get to enjoy, because most dogs can't be trusted off leash because it's you're just playing with fire. It's very dangerous.
Is that the first thing you teach a dog, is to come when called?
Yeah, probably right towards the beginning. We would just call it engagement. It's not necessarily considered a recall right out of the gate, but it's the building blocks of recall, which is get to me, I'm the money man, I have great things. And we typically charge up sendaways and recalls at the same time. We kind of counterbalance that. So in order to get the dog to come back to you, you got to get it to go away from you just so you can get more reps of it coming back to you. Otherwise, it would just be stuck to you and you're not getting the reps needed. A lot of reps are needed in order to really charge up a command.
The first thing that when I took Tilly for training was focus with the eyes. They showed you that the dog looks at you. And I notice when I walk her, she's always looking at me. She does pull at times. I mean, you know, she's got her spots where she's going to dig and she's going to eat something. You know, she's got a bit of piker. She was found in a cage. So whatever she finds is hers, little rocks. You know, in the beginning, I thought it was cute, but after she ate all my vitamins and I had to go to the vet at an expense, you know, we watched that. But that was the first thing. And then the second thing was to come to me and lick the palm of my hand. And I'll tell you, still to this day, and I have her maybe a year and a half, she will never turn that down.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I love both teaching engagement, recalls, what we call the focus command, looking in your eyes. That's absolutely part of that base layer that we want to install in as young of an age as possible. And I think the reason, like you said, to this day, your dog still comes to you and kind of almost defaults to that command is because, like you said, it was one of the first things you taught her, what we often refer to in dog training as first love. It was like, it's like her base layer. She'll always default back to that. And so that's fantastic that you were able to charge that up early on.
Now, as far as pulling, she uses a martingale. Or I use a martingale. I've went through so many collars, so many leashes. But everybody, you know, they talk about like the harness. It has to either be in the front or in the back or on the top. What do you use?
I'm very much anti-harness. We use harnesses in police work for tracking and criminal apprehension because we want to free the dog up. Again, key words there. We use the harness to free the dog up and actually encourage them to pull us because we want them to pull us on the track in the direction of where the bad guy is. So we're actually, again, using the harness to teach the dog to pull. Now, in obedience training, the last thing we want to use is a harness because you have literally little to no control. And so we prefer using either a martingale collar or a prong collar or a slip lead. Depends on the age of the dog, the breed of the dog, the size and the temperament. But being able to control the dog at the strongest point of their body, which is their neck, allows us to... That's why we use a steering wheel on a car, right? It's what allows you to control this vehicle with the least amount of effort needed. Whereas you're not trying to steer a car by, say, pushing it from the bumper. It's not going to really work that well for you. So we're strong proponents of using the right tool for the right job. And it's all about being, you know, very smooth, very clean and efficient in the training. So again, harness is not my best choice for teaching a dog to have that loose leash walk. It's a little bit about the tool, but actually even more so about the proper technique, which we can get into if you like.
Okay, I'll listen to it because I want our listeners to know, you know, how this is done, you know, because sometimes, you know, they could do it themselves. But I, you know, after I took her for training, you know, you got to practice every day, 15 minutes, you know, it does involve treats and, you know, 15 minutes, that's enough. Then we go out. I walk her a lot. I have her, I cook for her. So she's really, you know, an athlete. She's really cut hourglass figure. She goes out five. I walk her a lot.
That's perfect.
Yeah. And we go to the park, like I said, most days before that mysterious virus hit. We were going morning and late afternoon, different dogs and different, you know, activities. Now, in the morning, she'd play with the ball. In the evening, she'd wrestle. She's a really good wrestler. But, you know, whatever could help people, you know, maintain their dog, because we don't want anybody to bring their dog back because they think they failed or the dog isn't trainable. But one thing I noticed every morning when I did the 15 minutes, and say we did 20 minutes, and then that's enough. I want to have the rest of my coffee. Because it contained treats, she didn't want to stop. She was treat-driven. She'll do anything for a treat.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. And we always love to start there with that positive reinforcement training. If you can get the job done with treats, that's absolutely where we start. And that's typically what we do. Unless we run into a problem where it's an older dog or a dog with little to no food drive, then you start to run out of options. But even if you have a dog that's super treat motivated, we use that as a wonderful way to teach the dog how to perform a command, let's say walking next to us. However, what ends up happening is if that squirrel comes into play, or you're out of treats, or their tummy is full, you start to run out of that ammunition that was helping you. Now you have nothing to help steer that dog's behavior. Hence where we will come in with the proper training and the proper tools to help balance out, and the key word there being balanced training, balance out kind of the yin and the yang. The great example is you can use like a lollipops, treats, praise, and maybe even a small little bit of money to motivate your kid to clean their room. But if you don't have money in your pocket, you don't have a treat, and your kid's saying, I don't want to clean my room, I want to go outside and play with Johnny, you might have to resort to other parental type of skill set to say, hey, you need to clean your room or else. Now, typically, we might resort to, say, timeout. Problem is, dogs don't understand timeout at all. And so typically, what we're using is some form of leash pressure or spatial pressure to remind the dog that they have a very important job to do. And if they do a great job, we will pay them. But if they don't do a good job, we're there to help them do a better job. So guess what? We can get right back to praising them and paying them. So, and if we want to put that into context of how that works on the leash, we cover that in our online courses. And we even have a ton of free videos on YouTube showing different dogs of different ages, different breeds and temperaments, how you, I don't care where you are in the world or what kind of dog you have or how bad they've been pulling, I guarantee you, we can get any dog and every dog to walk perfectly on a leash in as little as 5 to 15 minutes. We have these videos we're talking about have millions of views each. And if you just look in the comments section, we actually ask the folks, please do us a favor, tell us where you're from, tell us what kind of dog you have, and tell us how long it took you to get your dog to walk as perfect on a leash as we show you in this video. And it's thousands upon thousands of comments from all over the world. So,
and these videos are free, this one?
Yeah, 100% free. We have about a handful of them just covering the walk, because we think the walk is really where you should start.
That to me is, I have a conversation with her. We communicate for the walk. Definitely.
Yeah. So we often say like a walk a day will keep the trainer away. Now, maybe two or three walks would be even better, but we would say there's three things you really want to get nailed down with your dog. The walk for sure is where you start. Part of the walk, by the way, is the next thing, number two, and that's doorways and thresholds, which is typically where you start your walk, out the front door, out the back door. We got to get these dogs to understand doorways and thresholds, because if they're not respecting that, then what you're going to have is an issue where the leash is maybe not hooked up and someone leaves a door open, or you open a door to get a package and your dog's shooting out off leash and it can get hurt. And then the third and final one that we want covered is just how you use food as a way to reward and basically come up with a payment system with your dog to keep them motivated. So if you can master those three things, you're really on your way there. And in fact, What I like to reference sometimes is I have a 7-year-old daughter who helps us with training a ton. She's in a lot of our social media videos, and she's very accomplished even for her young age. And this would really, I think, help put things in perspective for your listeners. When I'm out with my daughter, whether we're training a dog or not, she'll often grab me by the arm and kind of tug on it and say, "Daddy, look at that dog over there. It is completely misbehaved. It's untrained." And even a 7-year-old to say that, and I look, and she's always right. And it's a dog typically on a harness, on maybe a 30-foot flexi lead, and it's just absolutely not listening to its owners whatsoever, just getting pulled down the street. And so I ask myself, like, if that's how your walk is, if your walk is that bad, I can guarantee you everything else, you know, involved with that dog, this is a perfect representation of it. If your walk's an F, probably the sit and the down and the place command or the crate command or the recall in the heel are probably an F2. In fact, there's a new conversation that we're starting to drum up, which is almost like a doggy report card, and trying to teach people like how they can very quickly analyze their dog and give their dog their own grade, somewhere between an A and an F. Where is your dog performing in its basic obedience requirements? And these are actual requirements, in my opinion. Your dog needs to sit when told to sit, needs to down, it needs to stay, and it needs to recall, and it needs to walk nicely on a leash. Those are the 5 must-haves. And what I find, though, is, and this might hurt some people's feelings, I would say 80 to 90% of dogs we see out in the real world are getting straight Fs. And there's no need for that. Again, we already covered it. I don't care how old the dog is. I don't care the breed or the temperament. There is no reason why all of our dogs can't be getting A's and B's. Now, you don't often see, you won't hear me say some dogs are C's. The reason we don't see a lot of dogs that are C's is because if a dog is a C, that means they probably at one point were an F, but now finally the people are getting the training needed and they're very quickly moving up the scale to a D, to a C, to a B, to an A. And I'll end with this. It can take a human X number of years to get all through middle school, all through high school, bachelor's degree, master's degree, and a doctorate. I don't know, probably 16 plus years. The beautiful thing with dogs, as we mentioned earlier on in this, you can get a dog from straight Fs to straight As in as little as 4 to 6 weeks. And that's what we teach. That's what we do here. So what we say is there's no more excuses, folks. Like, let's get these dogs to be A and B students. And the whole reason behind it, you can take those A and B students with you anywhere and everywhere because they're just such well-mannered dogs, respectful, obedient, reliable. It's a pain in the butt to take a dog that's straight Fs anywhere. They're just pulling you this way and that way. They're misbehaved. They're jumping on people. They're barking. They don't listen. They don't recall. It's just a disaster. So anyways, that's my piece on it. That's where we're coming from with this. And it's just a new kind of thought process that we're trying to use to help empower owners and kind of wake them up as to where their dog is, but more importantly, where their dog could be.
Okay, we're just going to take a break and then we'll continue.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back, and I'm talking with Garrett Wing, and he's educating us on the best way and the healthiest way and the longest best way of having your dog well-trained. I use the word wait instead of stay. You know, I just say wait, like wait when we get out of the car so she doesn't jump. wait when we get out of the house so she doesn't pull me out. And I use the word side for heel. I watched one of those videos one time. I guess it was some kind of championship when those Belgium dogs, you know, they're like right next to the guy's leg and they're doing all kinds of, they stop, they run, they come back, and they use the word side. But what is the video that our listeners could go to if they wanted to look at some of the videos for themselves?
Sure. If they went to YouTube and typed in American Standard Dog Training, the video should be towards the top. If not, they can type in how to stop pulling American Standard Dog Training. And those, we have about 5 videos that are around 1 million views or more each. And we have one with a Golden Retriever. We have one with an Italian Mastiff. We have some with puppies. We have some just showing you, even with a 3 to 4 month old puppy, how you can start to get them to walk perfectly on a leash so they don't even start with the bad behaviors of pulling. Tons of videos out there on YouTube for free. And we're also on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. And then, of course, our online courses. We have a course called The Perfect Walk, which dives in a lot deeper. It's about 4 hours of material, so you can go as deep as you like with that, walking you through every little step of the way, all the tools that may or may not work for you, the tools that we don't think will work. And we showcase a ton of more different dogs of different ages and breeds and temperaments. Again, using prong collars, not using prong collars, just showing you multiple different ways to achieve the same outcome and really break down, just by the way, two very simple steps that are required to get any dog on the planet to stop pulling on the leash. The first one is called the corrective U-turn. The second technique is called the sudden stop. And with those two techniques, you can literally get any dog on the planet to stop pulling in 5 to 15 minutes. It's closer to 5 minutes, but you know, if you want to take your time, maybe 15 minutes, but literally your first walk. And it only gets better from there.
And that's theperfectwalk.com?
No, that's our online courses at DIYK9.com, the letter K, the number 9. And they'll see The Perfect Walk. And that's even available. We make that available in our lowest price point of all of our courses. It's a free bonus in our monthly membership, if that's something your folks are interested in. And by the way, any course that anyone wants to check out on our website, we have a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee, which is, nobody in the industry has that, because simply put, we know our stuff works. And if for some reason you're not happy, we don't want your money. We don't want it. We're only here to help change the lives of you and your dogs. And if we don't succeed in that, then we don't want your money. Now, the only reason it wouldn't work is if you don't put in the time and effort. So I don't make any illusions about that. I don't care who you send your dog to for training, or if you want to do it yourself, you got to put in a little time and effort. But I also don't want folks to think like, I don't have time. My answer to that is, of course you do. You know why?
To make time.
Well, that too, but you're going to take your dog for a walk anyways. You might as well just do it the right way. You're going to feed your dog anyways. There's a right and a wrong way to do that. You're going to walk in and out of the front door. You're going to have people coming over. Your dog's a part of your life regardless. We're just going to show you how to do it the right way. We're not even asking for extra time. Now, if you want your dog to turn out to be like those robot dogs, those police dogs, the ones you mentioned that have that perfect attention heel, that contact heel, they look amazing. It only takes 15 minutes a day to get your dog to look like that. And anywhere from, depends how much time and effort you put in, 4 to 6 weeks, 8 to 12 weeks, you're really rocking and rolling. You can have a robot dog. Now, some dogs have a better genetic predisposition towards that. That's going to be your higher drive dogs. Can you get a 10-year-old dog that's never done healing in its life with no food drive and super lazy to maybe be like a rock star? No, like we got to be honest there. But we can absolutely get him to stop jumping on people. We can get him to sit and wait politely at a doorway. There's a ton that we can still do.
Yeah, you know, with Tilly, anybody from the dog park of our friends, because we all know each other so well now, could walk in my door, no problem. But if somebody rings the bell, the tank comes out. She barks. Not that she would bite anybody, but, you know, she's got to bark. And if they came in, she would definitely, you know, sniff them, maybe want to jump on them. I notice now she's not doing that as much, the barking. But anybody from the park, because she knows all these people, it's when it's in her house, maybe she wants to protect me, although I think I'm protecting her. It's just amazing. I mean, I had dogs growing up, then I went to cats, but this is a different relationship, you know. This is my one plus, you know.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you 100%. And I think it's wonderful. And before anyone gets confused, like, we want so much structure and control over these dogs that they can't live a normal life. It's the opposite. Because we give them so much control and obedience, like I said, we can take them anywhere. And I want my dog to bark at the front door when there's a stranger there. I want them to do what they were meant to do. However, when I realize it's just Uncle Jeff or it's just the mailman, I also want the control where I can just snap my fingers and calmly, no yelling needed, tell the dog to stop barking, to be quiet, and to go to place and to stay there. Because I don't need the mania and the craziness. I don't need my dog jumping on people. And so you can have the best of both worlds. You can have a dog that's super obedient and under control. And yet, because they did such a good job, they can now have tremendous freedom and roam your house and go in the backyard and just live their best life. And you can, again, take them everywhere. So we really think of it as black and white, on and off. They're either on the job doing a fantastic job, or they're off the clock and they can be free and live their best life.
Wonderful. I really appreciate everything you said. And I know our listeners are going to take heed. And tell us again the online training. So if anybody wants to join up, and that costs how long? 4 weeks?
I'm sorry. Yeah. So American Standard Dog Training is where we do our VIP board and train program. And then we also have available to anyone anywhere in the world our online courses at DIYK9.com. And again, it's considered do-it-yourself dog training, but in all actuality, it's done with you dog training, because it's myself and my team of trainers are constantly helping our folks out. It's our mission in life to help get you and your dog from zero to hero, take you across the finish line. And we have a ton of courses available. And if we actually have, I almost forgot, we have one of the best free courses available anywhere on the internet in all genres. It's a 4-hour course where we do a deep dive and discuss the various different types of dog training available to you as a dog owner, whether it's group training, board and train, private training, or do-it-yourself training. We discuss all the pros and cons of each one. We dive in on the different styles or techniques of dog training and point out all the pros and all the cons so that you can make an informed decision on what's the best way to raise and train your own dog. And so basically we cut out a lot of the research for you and again, keep you from spending unnecessary money bouncing from one trainer to the next trainer to the next and still not getting your problem solved, which is something we see all the time. So that's what we do here.
Wonderful. I really appreciate you coming on. And for all of our listeners, I want to thank Garrett Wing, and that's American Standard Dog Training. And now for all of our listeners to get a hold of you, is there an office number where they could call up?
They can email us. We have several customer service people manning that 24/7. The email is info@DIYK9.com. And of course, they can reach out to us at any point via social media, American Standard Dog Training, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. They can comment us, they can direct message us, and we're more than happy to continue the conversation there.
Well, I thank you very much for being on our show. I want to thank my producer, Mark, and I want to tell all of our listeners, remember to live life unleashed. See you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.